Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
All right, glad you're along with us. Welcome in as we kick off the broadcast week here on Jaguars Today. Monday's brought to you by Wild West Guns and Gold. And big disappointment, because typically that means a visit with the Ozone. John Osier has got jury duty today, Tony. He may be deciding the fate of someone who was wrongly imprisoned for years, let out, and then was charged with a similar crime. For all we know, it may be another case of Making of a Murderer, starring John Osier as the deep cover backstory.
Maybe yeah, that was a bad jury instructions, right?
Is that what it was?
Yeah, I think that got that guy a new trial, at least. And they're also determining the jury on the case with the Lonzie Martin disappearance today, too.
Yes.
So it's an interesting day to be down there at the courthouse for jury
duty. I suppose it is. So we'll see if Johnny O is back in with us shortly, but he's out for today. We'll talk plenty of NFL playoffs. It was kind of goat weekend in the NFL playoffs.
No doubt.
Most games had one yesterday. I don't know really if the Green Bay Washington game had one, although early on DeSean Jackson fooling around.
He makes it easy to dislike him.
As he's wont to do.
Man.
Well,
he just makes it easy.
If anyone from that game could be had a finger pointed at him.
He was running into the end zone. I'm watching the game with a couple friends. He's running into the end zone, and I was like, he stepped out of bounds and the ball was behind him.
Right.
I was like, why is the ball behind him? There's no reason for the ball to be where it is except DeSean Jackson is a jackass. That's the only reason.
He likes to nonchalant it.
He still has no idea where he is on the field how many years into his NFL career, like he did in Philadelphia on that Monday night where he just dropped the ball in front of the goal line,
right,
running wide open. He just crossed the plane, idiot, and then you can do whatever you want.
But in a game where Green Bay came back and outscored him 35-7,
sure,
4-point difference in that game for the Washington Redskins.
No.
He rose to the level of some of these other guys. I heard Dan and Jeff talking about seeing an online poll. We figured we'd steal elements of that for our question of the day today. You can go to the Jaguars Today Facebook page, and it's out on Twitter as well, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at 1010XL Tyler, if you'd like to reply. Who was the biggest GOAT this weekend? You had Brian Hoyer, who had the 4 interceptions and a lost fumble, Tony. And, you know, I saw an editorial written that Bill O'Brien did the right thing by sticking with Brian Hoyer. Really? I mean, at that point, the guy is a shell of what he was. And I realize the game's only 13-0 at the half, and I guess that's why they stuck with him. People always say that despite the fact that we're getting our brains beat in, we're only down 2 scores. Well, that's great. Have you shown anything that indicates you're capable of getting those 2 scores? Brian Hoyer hadn't. It was a miserable performance, and now you've really got to wonder what the Houston Texans are going to do at the quarterback position. Already speculation that will Bill O'Brien draft Christian Hackenberg out of Penn State if he's available. From what I've seen ever since his freshman year, you better hope that they draft Christian Hackenberg.
Are you saying Brandon Whedon isn't the answer, Mike?
Well, I'm saying he should have been on Saturday. He should have attempted to be the answer. What was the point of continuing to go to the well with Hoyer?
You knew what you had with Hoyer, which was nothing.
It was worse than nothing. Tony, he threw 2 or 3 more right to the Kansas City defense that they dropped. He could have had 6. Well, I don't know if they intercepted any further later on those drives, but you know what I'm saying.
Sure.
He threw 6 or 7 interceptable balls, highly interceptable balls.
And if the defense wasn't as good as it was for Houston in that first half, it could have been a disaster for them. I mean, 13-0 was simply because your defense was outstanding. And once J.J. Watt left that game, they had no chance. I mean, defensively, they had no chance. The pressure stopped. Everything stopped for Houston once J.J. Watt left that game. And I'm not sure it's just because they lost the pass rush to J.J. Watt. I think it's the emotional impact, too, of losing that guy off of that defensive line. But they were not the same team defensively once he left the game.
Boy, if J.J. Watt gets hurt trying to run in some crazy option,
wasn't even a good play.
It was a terrible play. They throw in Vince Wilfork and they put J.J. Watt in the shotgun, and they're going to have him run like Tebow, right? I mean, that's the kind of that shotgun look that gets him, that Tebow used to do, where he'd get a kind of a look at the defensive line and pick his hole and go. He had like 3 yards to go, Tony. They didn't come close. He got stuffed for a loss.
Yeah, he lost 2 yards
on that play. It was not a good play
no
whatsoever. And then there, but yet, Was it who was it? Was it Gruden on the call of that game? I think it was Gruden and Tirico, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the mistaken. ESPN.
And Gruden's like, oh, are you kidding? Bill O'Brien, this is so great. He's going to – who knows what he's going to call next? Well, nothing that's going to score any points,
right,
apparently.
And nothing that is at all creative with all that stuff on the field. I mean, you could do that and then I don't – do something else with it besides, oh, we're just going to run it behind Wilfork. Like, it just – it was
– right. It was –
there was no creativity involved.
Right. You're like, okay, they're putting in Wilfork and they're putting in Watt. What is the most likely thing
they're going to
do?
And by the way, there was a hole to the left.
Right. Oh, and oh, he played some quarterback in high school. That's great. I didn't see J.J. Watt throwing the ball in that situation. I guess that would have caught everyone off guard. So, Brian Hoyer from the Texans loss. Blair Walsh obviously missing a 27-yard field goal. We can discuss that as well. And, oh, my goodness, the fan reactions to that one, the videos. That's the thing now. Everybody films the sets up the reaction shot, good or bad, one way or the other, so they can post it on social media. And a lot of devastated Viking fans. And then, of course, the combo of Vontaze Burfict and call him Adam or Pac-Man, but pick one, please, because Jim Nantz wanted to call him Adam all game long until he steps on the over the line, and then all of a sudden it's back to Pac-Man Jones. I thought, you know, they're trying to whitewash the whole pass by going with Adam. I know he doesn't go by Pac-Man anymore, but it just people, you say Adam Jones, there are a lot of people that don't know who the hell that is. Everybody knows who Pac-Man Jones is. And as soon as he jostles a referee, it's back to Pac-Man Jones. I thought it was pretty weak by Jim Nantz in the calling of that game. But the combo of Burfict and Jones or Walsh or Hoyer, cast your vote on the biggest goat from Wild Card Weekend. We'll talk about the Wild Card games and where the divisional playoffs will go from here. Now, eight teams remaining, already down to the final eight in the National Football League. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. If you'd like to get in today, 641-1010 is the number. It's also the number for the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. You want to talk Jags, you're always at the top of the line with us. With Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. It's Jaguars today, live at Everbank on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
Hoyer clutches, fires, that ball's intercepted. Is that Berry? Yes, it is. Eric Berry with the interception. Hoyer scanning. Underneath, he threw a pick in the red zone to Josh Malga. Hoyer with a massive mistake for the Texans there. Second and nine. Hoyer shot downfield. Nate Washington is overthrown. It's intercepted. That's a third pick of a half. Interception and the fifth turnover, fourth of the game, in the hands of Sean Smith. And he'll go down at the 21-yard line. And that's the story of the day. Minus four in the turnovers for the Texans, or plus four if you look at it from the Chiefs' perspective, as Hoyer has been intercepted for the fourth time in this wild card game.
Yeah, four interceptions for Brian Hoyer plus a lost fumble. Don't forget that one as well. goodbye, David Bowie. Shuffles off this mortal coil. Cancer, I guess he was battling for the last year and a half. My wife's favorite musical performer of all time.
Really, Bowie?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Well, I say absolutely because I know that. How do you not know that? I've known that for 25 years, Tony. How do you not know the rise and fall of Ziggy Stardust?
I'm not a big Bowie fan. I don't dislike David Bowie. And it's not like one of those where if it's on the radio, I'm like, switch it. I'll listen to David Bowie. But I recognize how many bands that I probably love were influenced by David Bowie. I do recognize that. Like, whatever your opinion on the guy or his music actually was, his influence in rock and roll is pretty clear.
He's great. Again, he's not one of my top 10 favorites or anything like that, but there are enough songs that he did that were phenomenal.
Sure.
That I think he deserves all the accolades that comes his way, but I think it's funny. We'll hear a lot of retrospectives and hear a lot of David Bowie music. Let's Dance and China Girl, probably like the two worst popular songs he ever did, and everyone acts like they're so phenomenal. So I'm appreciative that Tyler Devitt, despite being a young whippersnapper, went with the little Ziggy Stardust.
Did you guys know he just released an album like two or three days ago?
Yeah, Friday, right?
And then his birthday was on the 10th yesterday. Or Saturday, I think his birthday was Saturday.
Well, maybe it was Saturday then when he released it. It was in the last few days, yeah. So it's his last send-off. Maybe we should be playing it backwards. Can you still do that?
He was born on Friday the 8th.
Yeah, play it back. I'm sure you're right. I'm sure there's simple software that will play anything backwards.
Reverse,
right?
Yeah.
Right? And maybe it's a big joke. He's hanging with Tupac. down in Cuba.
Could be.
I believe that was the rumor for Tupac for a little bit. What do you mean rumor? That's real. Tupac's alive. All right. That's fine. whatever you like. We voted.
Tony, he and Elvis are chilling.
When we were seniors in high school in 1986, we thought we were so cool. And we voted the song Changes by David Bowie as our senior class song. And I guess, David Bowie may have not been, I don't know, you know, the prim and proper example that they wanted to send young 17 and 18-year-olds off as, you know, the example of how you should live your lives or something. I don't know. They wouldn't let us have it. And they made us go with, what was the big one back then? Is it Friends Are Friends Forever? Oh, yeah.
So I don't know. Stick
a finger down your throat. It was her. Was it Friends Are Friends? Or That's What Friends? No, it was That's What Friends Are For. The one with Elton John and like the three. Oh, horrendously.
Because Elton John is so much better a role model.
Right.
Than David Bowie. Well,
it was more like David Bowie.
He's kind of the weird one.
More subversive, I guess. He dressed up
androgynously. Songs about spiders.
Yes. What about those spiders from Mars? I don't know. But Changes is a great song. Anyway.
I agree.
Rest in peace, David Bowie, if you're in fact dead after all. There you heard the montage a moment ago of Brian Hoyer's interception. Should do your heart a little bit of good if you are a Jaguar fan. The Texans, by the way, have released three assistant coaches already today. So the
including two on the special teams side.
Yeah. Well, since they lost the game in the first 15 seconds, Tony.
I was curious about that, actually. So I actually looked up their special teams numbers, and against kickoffs, their long on the year was 50 that they had given up coming into the game. Now, obviously, the biggest one of the year went very poorly.
106.
for Kansas City, considering that was the only kick return they had in that game. Was the kick return for a touchdown because Houston never had to kick it off again. And
they average 106 yards allowed.
Yeah, but a long of 50 on the year, no touchdowns given up, obviously, with a long of 50. And they were around 24-25 on punt returns against 10.2 an attempt against them, which is right around the same number Jacksonville was at. So I wonder what was boiling beneath the surface there that – today they're letting go of their special team staff, but obviously it was a horrible, horrible beginning for them, and it never got any better on that Saturday afternoon.
No, it didn't. I think the most intrigue comes from the Cincinnati-Pittsburgh game, the way it all played out. You know,
no doubt.
And we tweeted out the question of the day, and among the candidates for the biggest GOAT of the weekend were the combo, and you can separate them if you want to, but the combo of Vontaze Burfict and Adam Jones for the Cincinnati game, and somebody said, well, what about Jeremy Hill? Because his fumble gave the ball back to Pittsburgh and gave him a chance. To me, as I'm watching the game play out, I thought Jeremy Hill was the reason they were back in that game, Tony, because when Gio Bernard got hit by Shazier, helmet to helmet, right? I mean, Jeremy Hill wanted to fight the whole team, right? And I honestly thought the way he came out and played like someone had lit a fire under him, maybe he should have been playing like that from earlier in the game. I thought he ran so hard the rest of the way in that football game. He was catching passes out of the backfield because he had to make up for the absence of Gio Bernard. I thought they're not even in that game without him. Now, people can say, and I've seen this reaction on Twitter, back off Blair Walsh a little bit. Without him, they don't have any points. Well, I don't agree with that. The team drives you into range. You're
it's
supposed
a 27-yard field goal.
That's a 27-yarder. Laces
there's
out,
no
laces
excuse.
In. And the laces are not an excuse on a 27-yard field.
No, and the laces have nothing to do with direction. It's distance. Like, the laces thing is a distance. And I've watched kickers for the last 24 hours on Twitter going, stop talking about the laces on a 27-yard field goal. It has no effect on the direction of the ball.
Well, Peter King did talk to some former special teams coordinator who said it will cause the ball to hook if you kick the laces. But on a 27-yard field goal,
27.
It shouldn't matter. Right. No, it's
and
a
he had already
shot.
Made it from further than that with the laces in.
Right. It's shorter than an extra point.
Yeah.
So kick the damn thing. He said, I just got fast. He choked is what he did. He totally choked. I mean, there's no question about it. He said, you know, I worked all season long to prove how consistent I can be. And then in the most important moment of the game, I got out of sequence. I got fast. As soon as my foot hit it, I knew I didn't hit it well. And he just missed it. And, man, these videos that are going around. I mean, a lot of people do them at their house. You know, they set up the camera and they film either their own or their loved ones' reactions as they watch sporting events, because everyone's obsessed with getting the best 10-second Instagram video out there or whatever they're doing. And the one that takes place inside the stadium at University of Minnesota's stadium there where they're playing the game, and these guys are on the upper corner, and they're kind of like – sideways from the goalpost, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like parallel to the goalpost, sort of, right?
Sure.
Like the side of the goal. So they can't really tell where the ball is in relation to the goalpost. They can only see the distance, and they know it's going to be plenty of distance, but they kick it, and these guys who are filming it from up there are going, oh, this is amazing. This is amazing. Yeah, we won, brother. And then a second later, what? He missed it? No, no, no way. That and on and on it went, and it just, oh, I mean, what a kick in the gut. No pun intended. I thought Minnesota dominated that football game. You had two plays. You had the broken play where the ball gets snapped past Russell Wilson. You know how that happens, Tony. As soon as there's a crazy miscue on a play, teams sometimes relax, right? You're like, oh, that ball's bouncing away. We got him. We got him. We got him. Somebody's still got to tackle the guy. And instead of just covering up the ball, he picked it up, and he's able to find Tyler Lockett over the middle for a huge completion.
Finds Lockett, and even if he didn't find Lockett, he was going to be able to throw it out of bounds for – I mean, he was going
to
save
fight
the play.
Another down.
Yeah.
Right.
He was going to save the play.
He saved 20
– yeah.
What did he save? 20 yards? 10 or 20 yards? 20 yards on the one sack. The other one, though, Everson Griffin had him wrapped up. And Russell Wilson was able to get rid of it. But it was by the thinnest margin that they're ahead in this football game or even really in this football game. I thought Minnesota did a hell of a job defensively, particularly in that game. Not to say that Seattle didn't, because Adrian Peterson wasn't going anywhere for the most part in that game.
Yeah, I think he wound up averaging, what, 2 yards a carry?
Right.
Something like that for Adrian Peterson.
His first 10 carries, he had 11 yards. Yeah. So that was kind of the story. And that's when you go in there, that's the problem with Teddy Bridgewater. I don't think Teddy Bridgewater can beat you. You know, I don't look, Blake Bortles can't beat you yet consistently, but I think he can beat you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think Blake Bortles has the ability to take over a game. He's not going to do it every time, and sometimes he's going to cost you. And I guess that's the big thing about Teddy Bridgewater is he hasn't cost them games, right? He's been more efficient, more protective of the ball, but he doesn't win them games. If he has all the pieces in place around him, I think he's capable of playing good football, but I don't think he's capable of putting a team on his back and carrying them.
Well, he certainly had him in position to win, and Blair Walsh missed a 27-yard field goal, but I think you can look back on a couple plays on that final drive from Minnesota. First of all, they really get moving because of a pass interference call. And I'm not saying it wasn't pass interference. It was clearly pass interference on Cam Chancellor.
Yeah.
But it's one of those kind of bad luck pass interferences where you're standing your ground as a defender and the offensive guy just runs into you and you really have nowhere to go, but it's still a
you
penalty.
You had to call it because I think he might have gotten that ball.
I do too. So it's a legit penalty. It was a couple plays before that where this is what I don't like about Teddy. Is they had that rollout, a bootleg to the left, and he had the option open in the flat. He also had the option wide open 20 yards downfield and didn't even look for it. He doesn't go high to low. He just goes to whatever's open right in front of his eyes. And instead of being able to get a big play and really getting that momentum swinging in Minnesota's favor, they needed a pass interference to get it going that way. Even the long completion of Rudolph is a pass that he threw, what, 5 yards past the line of scrimmage?
Right, it was a little quick out and Chancellor missed a tackle.
And that's what Minnesota needs to get big plays right now in their offense is guys have to catch it 5 to 10 yards past the line of scrimmage and do something with it. As opposed, Teddy's not making plays with his arm for that football team, and he's not looking to make plays downfield.
He doesn't
he's
have
looking
the arm
for
to
safe
do
options.
It.
Right.
I mean, occasionally he's going to hit a deep pass, but consistently he's not going to hit a deep pass. You know,
yeah.
I'm with you. I just, you know, again, he did have him in position, like you said, that were it not for a 27-yard field goal, he would have advanced.
Yeah, I don't think Teddy Bridgewater cost them a game.
I don't think he cost them, but I don't think he
– I think you lose opportunities in games because Teddy doesn't force the ball downfield at all.
Had they won that game, I would not have felt like Teddy Bridgewater beat the – Seattle Seahawks.
No, it's a Minnesota defense.
Right. Just for the most part, I don't really feel like Russell Wilson beat them. I mean, I think that play, it was a great play that he made, picking up that ball that was rolling around on the ground. But it was a defensive struggle all the way around in that one. But we'll get back to that Cincinnati game a little bit deeper as well. Haven't brought up the name Joey Porter yet. And how that game had the referees not lost control of it long before.
Completely.
That, I mean, just – I don't understand how one scenario where a guy gets hit in the helmet is the penalty and the other one isn't. And I get it, fine, if you want to rule that a guy who turns upfield and he's outside the tackle box is now a runner, he's not a defenseless receiver, I just – are you allowed to just lower your head and spear a guy in the helmet to tackle him
no.
in the National Football League?
No. They actually have a rule in the books that says no. That's an illegal play. Now, it's up for the referee's discretion on that kind of play. And I think, look, Giovanni Bernard gets hurt on that play, and you could see just the rage on the Cincinnati sideline. And that is now 2 3/4 games of rage. It is Le'Veon Bell getting knocked out by Cincinnati and the comments about blood in the street in game one. It's the late hit on Ben Roethlisberger that got Vontaze Burfict fined in game two between these teams. It's the continuous jawing in the media between both of them after both those games and leading up to this one. It's a fight between Burfict and DeCastro in the first half of that game down on the goal line where nothing happens in the officials' eyes. They just say, all right, second and goal. They don't do anything about it. It's the hit on Wheaton that gets penalized, and then the hit on Bernard doesn't.
Right.
And I think that once they got to that point, it was beyond their control. They couldn't do anything about what was going to happen with that Cincinnati team, except if they had thrown Burfict out of the game for the punch he threw on the kickoff, which he threw right before he made the interception, where everything got really crazy in that game. He threw a punch, and NBC went back and showed it, or CBS went back and showed the play because it was behind the play that there was a scuffle, and they showed Burfict throwing a punch. Nothing happened. Nothing happened.
And what did they do? They spent more time, Tony, talking about his tackle of Ben Roethlisberger,
right,
whether that was legal. And I'm like, what was wrong with that
play? It was a vicious play, but it wasn't a dirty play.
Right. It was to me, it looked like a textbook tackle. It was a great play. And they're all, because it's a quarterback who got hurt. Oh, is this legal? Is this not legal? And they let all this other stuff go, including the announcers who don't focus in on the legality of these other plays. Look, I get it. Everyone says you got to let the players decide it. The referees can't be deciding this. My feeling has always been if a player wants to act like a knucklehead, he is deciding it. He's decided to act that way. And the referees enforcing the rule book is not on the refs, right? I mean, people say it's like a foul in the final minute of a basketball game. Well, swallow the whistle and let the players decide it. If you foul the other player, you are deciding it. I'm just calling the foul, okay?
Yeah.
I'm not deciding it with the call. You're deciding it with your actions. And you're right, they lost control of that game early on. All right, we got to take a break. We'll come back more from Wild Card Weekend and the week ahead with the divisional round and the matchups. We'll take a little early peek at those as well. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Try to give the Vikings the lead. The snap, the kick is up.
Missed it's it. No good! Are you kidding me? It's no good! Oh, baby, it's Christmas in Minnesota! And the Seahawks have dodged a bullet from 26 yards out. Matt Blair misses. Blair Walsh, I beg your pardon, misses the field goal attempt. And Seattle now with 22 seconds left. And the Vikings have no timeouts left. One kneel down, and the Seahawks will move on to Carolina.
Walsh from 27 yards left hash. Snap good, spot down, Walsh's kick is up, and it is no good, he missed it! Are you kidding me? The season can't end like that! He missed it left! And the Seattle Seahawks are off to Charlotte. Blair Walsh missed a 27-yard field goal, and the Minnesota Vikings are going to lose 10-9.
Now sometimes you just rather be lucky than good.
One of those calls was the Vikings home broadcast on KFAN in Minneapolis. The other, the Seattle Seahawks road broadcast from Cairo up in Seattle.
Yeah.
Tough time guessing which was which on those, Tony?
No, I don't think so.
I love the comparisons. Those were not over the top by any stretch of the imagination, by the way. Those just pretty... That's about as straightforward.
The Seattle guy was so excited he forgot who kicked
it. Right. He called him Matt Blair. Who's Matt Blair?
I don't know.
Tony Blair is the was the
Prime Minister yeah.
over in England. I don't know.
I don't know who Matt Blair is.
He didn't really care. At that point, if that's the biggest issue you have, yeah, you don't care. Seattle's riding around with a horseshoe.
Apparently somewhere. Matt Blair is a former Vikings linebacker, 74-85.
Wow, somebody's been around for a while. I think that's what it's been then, right? He must have.
So he was remembering a linebacker from 30 years ago.
Well, I'm guessing he remembered a Viking named Blair.
Yeah.
You know, it's stuck in his head. And trust me, that's something that I could easily do, given the opportunity. I'm sure I could screw that up. But nevertheless, Blair Walsh, the former Georgia Bulldog, was the one. I think, did he make the most field goals in the league this year? I think he did. He's a great kicker. He's got tremendous range. Remember, he beat the Jags, right? When Gabbert let him down, and we thought that the Jags had a season-opening victory. The Gabbert a season yep. shorts play, and it was Blair Walsh hitting a 50-plus-yard field goal that gave the Vikings the stunning victory against Jacksonville. Had that not gone that way, who knows where the Blaine Gabbert era would have gone here in Jacksonville, Tony. But nevertheless, it was Blair Walsh missing that one. Seattle goes into Carolina. All the home teams favored this week, and all the road teams for the first time ever won in the wild card round. I was feeling pretty good about going 4-0, Tony, when the Redskins were up 11-0 on Sunday afternoon. But it wasn't to be. Meant to be at that point in time. And look, Kansas City, I still think if they play that game 10 times, maybe Kansas City wins 8 of them now after watching how outclassed they were at quarterback, but I don't think you'd get many of the blowout variety.
No,
like
I don't
we
think
got
so
this
either.
Weekend, you know, that was the shocking element of that whole thing. Now tonight's the national championship game.
Yes,
we don't talk a lot of college ball in here, but just wanted to take a look at a couple of things kind of related to the NFL coming out of the national championship game. For one, they're talking about all the action that's going down at the various sports books in Vegas, and in terms of the betting public, Alabama is a lot more money has gone on Alabama, but they say that's in part because at one of the sports books, one VIP high roller put down an obscene amount of money on Alabama, which has really tilted the the scales, and that across the board, most other places, it's close to 50-50 between Bama, this is against the spread, and although a lot of people have gone with Clemson on the money line because the payout is so strong if you bet them straight up to win, and also the under has been very popular. But I was looking at one sports book. Let me see which one.
What are the numbers?
What do you mean? How much money?
The line and the total.
Isn't the line 7 points? And it's 50. It's come down to, I think, 50.5 is okay. The total. 7 points for Bama. 50.5, I believe, is where it's at right now in terms of the over-under. Yeah, 50.5. It opened as high as 53.5, but they said the sharp money has been going on the under a lot with this game. They think it's going to be a defensive game. But in comparison to the National Football League, remember we always said, hey, if they ever got this college football playoff thing right, it would eventually rival only the Super Bowl, right, in terms of interest and excitement and a sporting spectacle. And that sure. may be the case. Tonight's game may be in the American sports landscape, other than the Super Bowl. Take the NFL out of it. Where does tonight's game rank among the sports landscape in the United States?
I mean, it's up there.
It's right up there, yeah. right? I mean, the World Series in any given year is a little bit more dependent on which teams are in it, right, in
yeah.
terms of the ratings. And I'm sure the championship game is somewhat
right.
like that.
And across the nation, I mean, you got two Southeastern teams that are going at it tonight with Alabama and Clemson. So you wonder what it's going to be, you know, West Coast and those kind of areas, like how much they're really
Although
gonna be
Alabama
watching.
Is obviously brand recognized sure. everywhere.
So there is a little bit of that. I think it is a little bit dependent on that. I don't think it's as dependent on it as probably – the World Series or the NBA Finals or even, you know, the Final Four are.
One of the guys out in Vegas who they're – I'm looking at this story on ESPN.com that they interviewed for this story. Let me see if I can – his name is Rood, R-O-O-D, I believe is what it is. But I can't see his first name. I don't see what his position is as I try to sit through this article. But regardless, he – so here it is, Jay Rood. He is the vice president of the MGM Sportsbook. Okay, they've taken 2 6-figure wagers on the game, one on each side, for instance. But He says he estimates that more than $1 million will be wagered on the game at his place, the MGM Grand. That compares to about even to the least bet wild card game this weekend in the National Football League. So three of the four games this weekend in the NFL will outpace all the money going on individually. Will outpace the money going on Alabama-Clemson tonight. You can only imagine how much the Super Bowl dwarfs anything when it comes to that. Because, you know, you factor in all the prop bets, and it's such a thing that even, you know, your mom watches the Super Bowl. You know what I mean? I'm not saying your mom. You know what I mean? Moms watch a Super
Everybody
Bowl.
Everybody watches the Super
right.
Bowl. Yeah.
I don't think it's the same way tonight with a college championship game. If you're not into college football, you're not. It's not the spectacle that the Super Bowl is.
No, I mean, I don't think just among my friends, right? And I got a bunch of friends that aren't huge sports fans. They're kind of casual sports fans, whatever. Super Bowl, you make plans. You have a party. You're getting together with friends. It's the Super Bowl. It's an event. The national championship tonight, none of that's going on. You know, among my casual sports fans' friends, none of that is happening.
For one
this.
Thing, it's a Monday, although you're still probably young enough that you can go hard on a Monday night. I mean, we get up. We do a two-hour radio show the next day.
Yeah.
We could probably go on very little sleep if we need to. So we're in a different category, right? I mean, it doesn't really necessarily
apply
to us. You
may be doing it again in a couple weeks out
in
San Francisco.
Three weeks from today, Tony. Well, 3 weeks from today will be media day for Super Bowl 50, which is going to be weird because we're 7-9 local is when we'll be on out on the West Coast. And so we'll be done at 9 a.m. There's nothing else to do on Monday in terms of Super Bowl coverage because nobody really rolls in until Tuesday or really Wednesday is when the bigger name players start coming in.
Yep.
Even a lot of the media. If you're really at, like, national media, you're covering the game in Hawaii, you're not getting in there till sometime late Monday afternoon, whatever the case may be. So there's really nothing to do. There typically wouldn't be anything to do. It'd be a great day to just to hit San Fran and not have any cares, but then we can do that, but we got to come back for media day that night and do some work. But one other thing I wanted to talk about with the NFL tying into tonight's game. I saw a story on Pro Football Talk this morning, and I have not watched much of these interviews. I've seen, for instance, Nick Saban and Dabo Swinney sit down together and be interviewed, I'm sure, by various outlets, but particularly by their broadcast partner, ESPN, doing it. And both teams, both coaches say they wish the NFL draft advisory board wouldn't tell juniors as early as they do what their evaluation is for the National Football League, because they and others such as Brian Kelly, the head coach of Notre Dame, echo their sentiments, feel that these players may start to look out for their own self-interest a little bit. Oh, says the coach making $6 million.
I was about to say, shut up.
Seriously.
You're not paying them anything. You're giving them a scholarship. If they're looking out for their own self-interest, they ought to be, because that's
they
all you're doing
be.
By saying don't give them the information. That's looking out for your own self-interest.
Especially if you're Brian Kelly. If you look, I get it. You're the teams tonight have something to play for, okay? Does winning some random bowl, I don't care if it's the granddaddy of them all
right.
or anything else, does winning some bowl that doesn't signify a championship of anything other than the championship of that particular bowl? Is that more important than what? What is it more important than? You're supposed to be preparing these guys for success in life. And part of that, for some of them, is going to be moving on to the next level. Here's the thing, Tony. I think is it next week, I think, is the deadline. The deadline's coming up shortly to declare for the NFL draft.
Yeah.
Okay? And the reason that is, it's because college coaches want that as early as possible so it doesn't interfere with their recruiting schedule. So here's an idea. Why don't you move back the deadline? These guys, what you don't want is you don't want a guy playing in the game tonight to have like 3 days to decide based on an accurate evaluation
sure.
of whether or not they should come out and make the biggest decision of their life. So they did it this year, I think, on December 23rd. So they've had this info for 2.5-3 weeks. And have had time to process it. And Brian Kelly says, well, this impacts the way some guys practice. Well, maybe you need to get other guys. Or as the Michael David Smith wrote, isn't that your job to make sure these guys stay properly motivated
right.
and practice well? I mean, that's what you're getting your $6 or $8 million or whatever you're making as a head coach. It was so self important of these coaches to put that out there.
In a system that's already so one-sided.
Right.
For the coaches in universities and the NCAA, and the players are just there making it all happen, right? Like, they're just the actual engine for everything that is happening to make all this money, and for them to get upset because a player may be looking after his own self-interest because nobody else is going to. Nobody else is going to look out for his interest except for him.
Right.
He knows he can, so you don't want him to have that information to look out for that? That's a ridiculous
thing. You know who would look out for his interest, Tony? His agent. Oh, you're not allowed to have one, though. So, you know, I mean, you're right. Who is, other than your parents? And you don't have, without that piece of information, you know, we hear all the time, people rely on Mel Kiper and Todd McShay too much and an overinflated sense of your value, and these guys make mistakes. Well, this is the NFL advisory board that sits down with input from teams around the league in terms of kind of anonymously giving an assessment of this guy's, a lock first-round pick. He should come out. This guy
sure.
is likely a second-round pick. This guy's no better than a priority free agent, and so on down the line. And they give them these kind of evaluations. For these coaches to come out, it just seems incredibly tone-deaf.
Do you want to hear what Nick Saban said at SEC Media Days about this topic?
Let's hear it.
We're trying to get ready for a game, and all of a sudden a guy finds out he's a first-round draft pick, or a guy that thought he was a first-round draft pick finds out he's not a first-round draft pick, and we're trying to get ready to play a playoff game. It would be better not to submit that information to a player until he was finished competing in college.
Yeah, well, there you have it.
It's better for them.
Right. It's right. It's better for the coaches. It may be better for the outcome of your team. And I understand it in the case of the Nats. You're playing for something with the semifinals and the championship. But guess what? There are distractions in life. You know, it seems like they want to put these guys in a bubble and be able to feed them anything they want. Rah, 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 win one for the old alma mater is the most important thing you're ever going to do. No. There are many more important things that you're going to go on to do beyond this, hopefully, including how you're going to earn your money for the rest of your life and support your family and yourself and all these things. So I just thought that was a little bit tone deaf. Like this tweet that I just got from J.J. Hilton. It says, please stick to sports talk. You only embarrass yourself talking about music. Bowie not in the top 10. No, he's not in my personal top 10, which is he's not among my top 10 favorites. And probably I would say David Bowie is not among the top 10 musical acts of all time. I think that's probably fair to say as well off the top of my head. But that's why it's an opinion, JJ. You embarrass yourself. You should stay away from Twitter, especially if they expand beyond 140 characters, because you'd only do further damage to your own online reputation. Thank you for the tweet. Coming back this date in football and the Honda drive around the NFL. It's Jaguars today on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history, January 11th. Let's take you back to 1946. On this date, Tony, Burt Bell became the second commissioner of the National Football League. He's actually credited with doing a whole bunch of stuff. He stayed in the position until he was passed away at the age, or I forget what his age was, passed away in 1959. Saw the what's considered the greatest game ever played, and then moved on out and was inducted in the Hall of Fame's first class in 1963. And in fact, the Maxwell Award is given out to the best player in college football every year, or the best quarterback. Is actually the Burt Bell Award given out by the Maxwell Club. Didn't realize that. So pretty significant figure in the history of pro football. 1959, the NFL Pro Bowl. When you talk about the changing calendar of the National Football League, the Pro Bowl played on this date in 1959. Remember, it used to be played after the Super Bowl, a week after the Super Bowl, or the championship, as the case may be. The East beat the West 28-21 in that one. 1970, Super Bowl IV, Kansas City beat Minnesota 23-7. Blair Walsh missed the key field. No, he didn't. in the New Orleans Superdome, Len Dawson was the MVP. We retweeted the picture somebody sent me of Len Dawson sitting on the sideline smoking cigarettes during the game. That used to be a thing.
Yep.
Back in the day. Let's see. What else? 1987 on this date. Denver quarterback John Elway engineers the drive, trailing Cleveland 20-13 with 5:32 remaining in the AFC title game. Elway moved the Broncos 98 yards on 15 plays to force overtime. Then he moved Denver 60 yards on 9 plays on their first possession of overtime to set up a Rich Carlos game-winning 33-yard field goal. Sorry, sudden death. Everybody doesn't get the ball. That was back in the day. 1998, the championship games played on this date. Denver beat Pittsburgh 24-21, and Green Bay beat San Francisco 23-10. The Broncos would go on to win their first Super Bowl a week later over the Green Bay Packers. Also, birthdays for this date. Patty Driscoll. You know Patty Driscoll, Tony. He's a 6-time All-Pro NFL quarterback and coach, a halfback, quarterback, tailback, and blocking back, inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1965. You probably haven't heard of him because he was born in 1896, and he toiled in the 20s. And that's the most significant birthday I've got for this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Rex Ryan and the Buffalo Bills have hired Rex's twin brother Rob to be the team's defensive coordinator. Rex and Rob haven't been on the same coaching staff since they both worked on the defensive staff for their father, Buddy Ryan, in Arizona back in 1995. Rob was fired by the New Orleans Saints, who finished last in the league in both yardage and points allowed. Ben Roethlisberger is hoping to be able to play this weekend for the Steelers against Denver. The early report is Ben has a sprained AC joint in his throwing shoulder. He left the Steelers game against Cincinnati on Saturday night, but returned for what turned out to be the game-winning drive. Steelers wide receiver Antonio Brown is in the concussion protocol after that vicious shot he took from Vontaze Burfict. Kansas City wide receiver Jeremy Maclin went down with what appeared to be a knee injury on Saturday, but an MRI revealed no knee ligament damage. Instead, it is being categorized as a high ankle sprain for Maclin. And the NFL Network, speaking of old Super Bowls, will show Super Bowl I in its entirety for the first time ever on Friday night at 8 p.m. The NFL Films had to stitch the program together from over 140 different sources to find every play from the game, but they finally feel like they have it all compiled together, and it'll be presented for the first time on Friday night at 8 o'clock.
Are we going to get both second-half kickoffs?
I don't know.
You remember that story? They kicked off, and TV wasn't out of commercial, so they said, nope, that one doesn't count. We're going to kick it off again.
Can you imagine?
TV has ruled the sporting landscape for forever. It's not a new thing. Okay?
No.
They re-kicked the kickoff in the second half. Imagine if the next one was taken back to the house for a touchdown. I mean, are you kidding me? Now at least they occasionally you get back a few seconds late and you miss half a play. It's rare, but it happens from time to time.
Well, that guy's standing out there on that field. He's not letting you come back until TV is ready.
Right, for the most part, exactly. For TV, sometimes on radio, different clock.
Sure,
you know, you'll come back in the middle of a play.
I've done a couple of the ESPN3 games for UNF basketball this year, and the officials are waiting on me. You know, as the TV guy, because we're streaming it, they're waiting on me to get back.
You give them the high sign, you're like, okay, here we go.
We do. We tell them, okay, we're back.
Yeah.
And that's when they'll go back to playing. They're waiting on us every time.
Tony Smith, international broadcast star of ESPN3.
You can watch that anywhere.
What are give me your record for the home team in your broadcast?
In the games that I've done, the men's team is 1-0. In the only game that I did for them, the women's basketball is 1-2.
All right, so maybe the men need to invite you back more often.
Yeah, so 2-2.
All right, not bad. 2-2.
Yeah.
They'll keep you. Heck, they'd get you a premier bowl game these days.
Yeah.
You just go 500.
Then I can yell at my players about knowing their status in the NFL.
Exactly. Hey, you need to focus on the Dixie Cup Bowl here. It's crucial to what we're trying to get accomplished as a culture here. Pac-Man, Adam, whatever you want to call it. I mean, it was clear to me, evident, that the narrative from the National Football League is we want to do away with Pac-Man. He himself said, I want to be known as Adam Jones, right? So you try to honor a guy's wishes. And all game long, it's Adam, 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 to the point where it almost seems forced. And, you know, for casual fans of the game, they know who Pac-Man is. He's notorious. And maybe they won't make that connection with Adam Jones. And as soon as he goes ahead and bumps a ref, it's back to Pac-Man Jones. I think the biggest gripe, and Pac-Man Jones, by the way, went on the Dan Patrick Show today on another network or several other networks, as the case may be, syndicated national broadcast of the Dan Patrick Show. And he said, I know he was faking, talking about Antonio Brown getting hit in the head by Vontaze Burfict. Well, here's the thing. He got hit in the head. He got leveled. Whether he's faking or not, I think the flag came out soon enough that he could have gotten up. The flag's not going to get picked up if he gets up quicker, right? I mean, the fact he says he winked at him coming off the field. Maybe he did. I don't know. Maybe he was faking, Tony, as far as that goes. But Vontaze Burfict clearly hit him in the helmet.
Yes.
Several steps after the ball had already sailed past.
Yes.
Totally unnecessary. So that one to me is inexcusable. The one I'd be more upset about, and we mentioned it earlier,
if he bounced right back up, it should still be a penalty.
It should still be a penalty, exactly. Because it shouldn't matter the outcome of it. Although we know in reality, sometimes you get a scenario like you get a guy with a flagrant foul, and if the guy gets hurt, they may...
Well, and honestly, I think that's kind of what happened. I'm not talking about the get hurt, the Bernard versus the Wheaton penalties. The Wheaton shot looked so much worse because he still had all that momentum going towards the middle of the field. The shoulder went right into his chest, right? It was one of those types of plays where it just was such a violent collision in the middle of the field that certainly something had to be wrong with that hit.
And there was nothing wrong with
right.
that hit, in my
and
opinion.
Bernard, it's a guy stopping and starting, right? He's turning. He's trying to get his body turned around so he doesn't have momentum going up the field. Shazier does. But he puts the top of his helmet right into the guy's helmet. And that's an illegal play.
If you've watched enough football at this point in today's era of being on the lookout for this, as soon as that happened,
yeah,
you knew.
But the collision
didn't
look as violent as the Wheaton play
did. I guess I get in the sense that the body wasn't flying through the air and all these things, yes, but that was one that if you've watched it, you knew that was bad for Gio Bernard.
Yeah.
The second it happened, the second he went down, the way his body fell, that kind of limp, lifeless, you knew a good chance he was knocked out cold.
Same thing with Antonio.
Nobody touched Wheaton's helmet. Wheaton didn't get touched at all in the helmet. I mean, you got different bodies flying around. I thought it was a beautiful football play. But then the part that Cincinnati really should be upset about is Joey Porter out there. He's not a member of the medical staff. He is not the position coach of Antonio Brown. He's not the head coach. He has no business being on the field. And he's out there instigating from what Adam Jones says, and I don't disbelieve him.
No.
He says he was out there calling people biatches, right? I mean, run around.
I don't doubt it for a
second. You're this, you're that. And others, as I think Peter King pointed out in his Monday Morning Quarterback column, I think that's where I saw it, that people have told him that over the years Joey Porter had a reputation of being one of the best in terms of running his mouth and trying to get another guy to react to it. Well, here he is as a coach. He's supposed to be held to a different standard. First of all, he shouldn't even be out there at all. And the referees, this is another example of just how they lost control of that football game. If you flag Joey Porter, you're supposed to now in the NFL, instead of just offsetting penalties, they're supposed to really strive to get the guy who's instigating. As soon as he starts running his mouth and cursing at the Cincinnati players when he has no business being on the field, should have been 15 yards on Joey Porter right there.
Yeah.
It never would have come to Pac-Man Jones
and if
Pac-Man, doing anything.
And if Pac-Man reacts the way he does, then you can throw another flag on Pac-Man Jones.
At the most.
Right.
Or it should have been offsetting.
You know, and I'm not sure. That's all after the play, so I assume the 15-yard penalty for the hit on Antonio Brown would still be enforced, and the other two would be offset afterwards. I assume that's how that whole thing would have worked out. So Pittsburgh would have probably needed to run another play to try to get in field goal range with no timeouts. I mean, the game is still in doubt at that point for Pittsburgh, but instead they don't throw the flag on Porter. They throw the flag on Adam Jones, who was stupid enough to react to what happened with Porter. And he talked on the Dan Patrick show earlier today. He said that Antonio Brown winked at him on his way off the field. So?
Right.
So what? So you fell into their trap? So you fell into the trap of Porter and Antonio Brown, even if you believe he faked the injury from the very beginning, so you were stupid enough to react the way you did in that moment? I get it that there are, especially this game, there's so much emotion in those moments, and you lose control sometimes, but that doesn't mean that you're less of an idiot for losing control.
Hey, Tony, if you're a good actor and they give you an award, what do they give you? What do you get?
An Oscar?
Maybe an Oscar. What else? Maybe a
Golden Globe, perhaps.
Maybe an Emmy if you're on television, right?
A BAFTA?
Something. I don't know. What is the BAFTA?
Tony Award? I think BAFTA is like the European, it's like the English version of the Oscar.
All right. A Tony Award if you're on a stage production,
yeah.
Something like that. When Adam Jones went on the Dan Patrick show and said, I know he's faking, he said, I think he need a Grammy Award for that one.
He was singing on his way off.
I think he need a Grammy Award for that one.
Said
Adam Jones. Hey, here's the good news. Adam Jones has plenty of time to go throw money around at the strip clubs and order people shot, allegedly. I mean, if he wants to do that, apparently he's enjoyed that in the past. And, you know.
He's handled it about as poorly as you can. From the moment that the play happened Adam Jones has handled everything about as poorly as you possibly can.
But I appreciate, from my perspective, I appreciate the fact he's willing to go on a radio show and just say whatever, you know, there's right. no filter on him.
The penalty that he drew, the Instagram post 5 minutes after the game ended. I mean, it was up 5 minutes after the game ended.
I agreed with him, though.
Well, whether you agree with him or not, why are you doing it?
Just to, I don't know, express your frustration.
Why? And right. then you go on Dan Patrick and say, he winked at me.
And I think
and Joey Porter was calling me names. Like, that's what you went on there and said. And that's the reason you reacted and then said he deserves a Grammy.
Brightest of the bright.
Him and Kanye.
There you go. All right.
Get a Grammy.
Coming back in a moment, you and I will take a look at, you know what season it is, Tony. It's not duck season. It's not wabbit season. It's mock draft season.
No doubt.
Dane Brugler, CBS Sports NFL Draft Scout, has got a new one out there. Pretty much what we've seen of late, but we'll go through some of the top picks anyway, at least including up to your Jacksonville Jaguars, see if anything's changed from his last time he threw an opinion out there. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories is Wild West Guns and Gold. Revolvers to sporting arms and everything in between. Wild West Guns and Gold will meet or beat any gun shop's price in the USA, guaranteed. You can even trade your gold for guns at Wild West Guns and Gold. Guns4Jax.com is how you find them online. Guns, the number 4, J-A-X.com. Or better yet, pop in and visit them on South Lane Avenue here in Jacksonville. Call 693-0777 for Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor of Jaguars today. Coming back with a look at mock draft season. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. How dare you play David Bowie? How dare you play him? It's the 39th best artist of all time, says Rolling Stone magazine. Wild West Guns of Gold Monday. David Bowie passed away, 69. Seemed like he was older than that.
It does.
Or just maybe he because he's been around. Right? He lived hard.
Yes, he did.
But, you know, passed away of cancer. So
there are some guys who fit in a lot in 60 years. Man, Bowie's one of those guys.
He did do a lot of things, I guess. But I guess, you know, if you think of it, like 69 years old, if you think of it, you wouldn't think of it this way. But for me, okay, that would mean, I guess, Bowie was 23 when I was born. That makes perfect sense, actually. You know, it just seems because I've never known a time growing up in music when David Bowie was not part of the musical scene.
Mm-hmm.
That it just seemed like he was older than that. 69 is not that old. Just ask Tom Coughlin, right?
Right.
Take over the Eagles. Seriously. And I heard the boys mention it this morning. They're not the only ones. And just want to point out that I realize I'm not the first to suggest this. But how do you allow a situation where Tom Coughlin, quote, resigned, or I don't know exactly how it went down. They try to couch it as a resignation. Well, if you resign, you typically don't get any more money, right? When you leave the money behind.
Right.
But if you're going to pay him, I think there should have been something in there. We'll let you call it a resignation, but you can't take the Philadelphia job, which you knew was open at the time, this year. You can't agree to coach an NFC East team this year. Beyond this year, fine. You can't throw it right back in our face that you're going to jump from us to the Philadelphia Eagles. So that may be exactly what TC ends up doing. Hey, it's his prerogative. And I'm just saying the Giants should have not allowed it to be his prerogative. They should have handled that in a different form or fashion.
Sure.
But, hey,
definitely, yeah.
If I'm Philly, I mean, what's better out there than Tom Coughlin?
Nothing.
They're not much better in the league than Tom Coughlin.
No.
So I'd be all about it, too. Dirk Cutter is coveted by the Buccaneers. You continue to hear reports on that. But he did interview with the San Francisco 49ers. So it's not a done deal that they got rid of Lovie Smith and had Dirk Cutter in their back pocket. They're said to be enamored with the offense coordinator for the Arizona Cardinals as well, and maybe waiting on him down in Buccaneer land. You would think, I haven't heard his name kicked around with too many others. As a matter of fact, it escapes me right now.
Well, I would think Tampa, just talking about the NFL jobs, would be a really interesting job for anybody, you know, that's looking for a head coaching job. Because you look at, like, say, Tampa compared to Philadelphia and San Francisco and some of these other spots that are opening up right now, you feel like they might have the franchise quarterback in place. And all these other places, Tom Coughlin's a great coach, but he's going into a situation that, with what Chip Kelly has been trying to do, feels chaotic. you know, with just trying to build it to make it look more like what Tom Coughlin has traditionally done, which is more that pro style thing. And Philadelphia just doesn't look that way. Tampa looks like it could be, and it sounds like they want to give that job to their offensive coordinator, which makes some sense.
But I think the chaos was Kelly induced in part. You know, I think when Tom Coughlin comes in, the chaos goes out the window. You know what I mean? I mean, they stood with Andy Reid for a long time. That's not been an organization that has been quick trigger.
Sure.
In terms of turning over their
pieces.
Head coach.
I mean, with Tom Coughlin coming in, does DeMarco Murray look like DeMarco Murray again?
Perhaps.
Maybe. You know, maybe. And I don't know that he ever got a real chance with Chip Kelly's system. I don't know how much of a fit he is for that. I think Ryan Matthews was clearly a better fit than DeMarco Murray was for that Philadelphia offense. And they still have some pieces in place. And defensively, I think they'd be helped a ton by anybody but Chip Kelly coming in as the head coach.
Like we always talk about with players as well, you go to the Bucs, there's no state income tax down here.
Right.
I mean, that's an attractive situation. I agree with you. I think a team potentially on the rise went from 2 wins to 6 wins. And who knows what kind of leap they'll take next year under new management. Dane Brugler of NFL Drafts got along with Rob Rang. They do dueling mock drafts. Pretty much I think they'll update these on a weekly basis, Tony, and we'll take a look at them throughout the process in the offseason. Won't obsess on them unless we choose to. But we had Tony Pauline on last week. We'll have Dane and Rob on at various times throughout the next several months leading up to the draft. And so it's interesting to kind of build a see if there's some kind of consensus on who the top players are. Pauline is always a guy who, to me, stands out and looks at things through his own way, right? And more so than some others. There seems to be some, I don't know, groupthink, or it seems to be guys focusing and there's a consensus on certain players, such as Jalen Ramsey, right? Jalen Ramsey, by most, seen as a top 5 prospect. Tony Pauline thinks he's not a top 10 prospect, not the best player at his own position, for instance. But maybe he's wrong, and maybe these guys are all correct about Jalen Ramsey, who's been often associated with the as being coveted perhaps by the Jacksonville Jaguars, and now picking 5th overall, the Jags may be in perfect position to grab Jalen Ramsey if they opt to. Dane Brugler doing his update of his latest mock draft, really not much different than what he had out there a week ago, but he's got Laremy Tunsil going number 1 to the Tennessee Titans. And I told you, Tony, again, Bosa would top my list, but if Tunsil was hanging around, I'd have to think long and hard about it. Although one thing that Tony Pauline told us on Friday was, pretty deep draft for offensive tackle, right? And it seemed like he mentioned a guy specifically, Jason Spriggs of Indiana, who'll be at the Senior Bowl, and the Jaguars coaching staff will get a long, extended look at him.
Yep.
As being the kind of guy that could really come in and help a team. He described Tunsil, though, as a guy that he thinks could be a great player if he puts it all together. I don't think most of these other guys are in that category, but a lot of offensive linemen that could help you and play sooner rather than later. Now, you know, again, Tunsil, if he really could be a special player and he could start day one, I think it'd be something the Jags should consider at number 5. You get beyond that, you think, all right, well, if you can get a pass rusher early or an impact safety or an impact defender of whatever position, maybe you'd be more open to going in round 2 for an offensive lineman. I don't know if that's the case. I almost feel like it's got to be a guy who can walk in day 1 and compete to take that spot immediately at left tackle, or you wait until significantly later in the draft and you maybe draft for depth on your offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably where I stand on it, is you're either bringing in a guy to replace Luke Jokel or you're waiting to basically look at depth at that position.
And let's grant, and let's say that we don't expect that they're looking at Luke Jokel the same way we are. I don't think Dave Caldwell's sitting there like, we got to do something. We got to immediately replace Luke Jokel.
No, right? And I do understand the organization's comments here in the last couple weeks about focusing on defense. It makes sense. And I don't know how much I agree with it's easier to build defense than it is offense. I don't know how easy it is. I think it's more difficult to find the quarterback than anything else in the National Football League, and it feels like they've landed on that a little bit with Blake Bortles. So trying to find somebody that can help you defensively, you feel like you're going to get some Derek Marks back, you're going to get Dante Fowler Jr. on the field for the first time, and really the puzzle gets interesting because what's going to be available to you at 5? And what kind of gap is there between Joey Bosa and the next available pass rusher in this draft. You know, I don't know how big that gap is. It's a question that we'll be filling out over the course of the next couple months as we take a look at where this Jaguars team may go with that pick, which is why I think safety has been a serious talking point and consideration very early on in this process. Is if Dave Caldwell is going into last year's draft and saying, I looked at next year's class, I think there's one guy with a first-round grade, you have to assume he was probably talking about Joey Bosa.
Right, he was a well-known prospect
right,
last year.
At that point. So if he felt that way, how much of the evaluation on these guys have changed? And if Joey comes off the board for a team that is desperately looking to upgrade pass rush and that defensive side, what other options are available to him?
Right.
I just don't know.
Here's how the top five went for Brugler. He had Laramie Tunsil, the offensive tackle from Ole Miss, going to Tennessee. By the way, speaking of going to Tennessee, it didn't go unnoticed. It may have gone unremarked upon on this program, but Chris Polian, who's been working in the Jaguars front office for the last few years, interviewed for the Titans GM job. I don't want to see that happen. I don't know if Chris Polian's a future brilliant GM, but I don't want a guy who's got, you know, privy to the Jaguar way of thinking, you know what I mean? Now, Dave Caldwell is a guy who keeps his own counsel, and I'm sure he hasn't done full evaluations on all these prospects. So it's not like the Jaguars draft board is stacked and set in stone here right, on January 11th. But I don't like the idea of a guy going from the Jaguars front office to go and run the Tennessee Titans organization. That doesn't fill me with the warm fuzzy. So, Chris Polian, I hope you, move up the corporate ladder somewhere else other than Tennessee or
sure, or
return to your role here in Jacksonville, but not looking to have you take that job in Nashville and help those guys get better any sooner than they have to. Moving down the line, Tunsil, number one to Tennessee. Jared Goff, the quarterback out of Cal, going to the Cleveland Browns. A lot of people are going to mock quarterback to the Cleveland Browns at that spot. The quarterbacks will vary. Paxton Lynch, we've seen in several mock drafts. Joey Bosa going to the San Diego Chargers with the third pick. Laquon Treadwell, the wide receiver from Ole Miss, going to the Dallas Cowboys.
Mega Quan,
I like it. And then Jalen Ramsey going to the Jaguars. And the note that Dane Brugler writes, the Jaguars have been searching for cornerback help for a long time, but haven't drafted the position in the first round since 1999. Ramsey has experience at safety and corner, but is better categorized as a versatile ball hawk. Is that going to work against – is his versatility going to help him? It probably will, but do you think he's drafted more as a cornerback or more as a safety, Tony? I think for the Jags, they've been searching for a guy who could play that safety role, that it seems almost as tough as it is to find quality cornerbacks, it seems for the way they describe the importance of that position in this defense, it may be tougher to find that sideline-to-sideline free safety than it would be to find cornerbacks that fit their profile.
I think in Jacksonville, his flexibility helps him more. I think for Jacksonville, it helps him more. I don't know with other systems and exactly what they're going to be asking all these other guys to do, but I think in Jacksonville, it helps him because they need somebody that can play that free safety position and play center field, has that size and athleticism that they're looking for, and he seems to fit that bill. And he's also a guy that you never have to take off the field because he can come down and play corner. He can play one-on-one if you need him to do that. He gives them flexibility with what they're doing at that position, which the guys they have right now just simply don't do in this defense. So I think in this defense in Jacksonville, his flexibility will help him more than it would in most situations. So we'll see. I mean, we got months to figure out this evaluation. That's where it gets interesting beyond Bosa, is if you are looking for defense, where are you going?
Right.
Because
you're going to draft an injured linebacker,
right? I don't
are
know.
Are you going to take Miles Jack,
right?
Who may be, Tony, if he were healthy, a value at number five.
Yeah, and Jalen Smith was a guy that certainly may have been considered,
right,
coming out of Notre Dame. But
seems like it's even less likely that you take Jalen Smith
than you would,
right?
I mean, you'd think he's going to wind up second round, probably.
And he's probably, you know, good chance he doesn't make any kind of impact in his rookie season,
yeah,
you know, with the injury coming as late as it did. Here's what Rob Rang has got for his top five right now. He's got Tunsil at number one as well. He moves Bosa to number two to Cleveland, okay? Then he's got Ramsey going to the Chargers at three. Here's what he says about Ramsey. He says, whether the Chargers return to San Diego next year or not, it appears the franchise is moving on from three-time Pro Bowl safety Eric Weddle. duh. That seems like the surest bet of the offseason. Weddle, a pending free agent, reportedly told prior to the year that he wasn't part of the team's long-term plans. The Chargers may see Ramsey as the ideal replacement at free safety as he possesses a remarkable combination of size, athleticism, and instincts, allowing him to project nicely to corner or safety. So, seems like Brugler's looking at him more as a cornerback. Rank's looking at him more as a safety. Again, Pauline, we asked him, you know, where does Jalen Ramsey rank? Is he the clear-cut guy is his best at his position? Clear-cut best guy at his position. He seemed to see him more as a corner, all right, based on our discussion. And the kid, Alexander, out of Clemson, who you'll see on display tonight, is who he said, Mackenzie Alexander, is the top cornerback in his class. And I believe if he didn't, if I'm not mistaken, did he say he felt like both Ramsey and Hargraves were a little bit overrated when we talked to him
on
Friday?
Yeah, he did.
Right?
He did.
And that basically none of these guys, including Alexander, I got the sense, was necessarily worthy of a top 10 pick. He definitely said Ramsey was not a top 10 prospect, in his opinion. And the question is for the Jaguars, who are you taking with the fifth overall pick in the draft? So you better have a strong feeling that he's at least a top 10 defender. Miles Jack, out of UCLA, guy we just mentioned a moment ago. He's got Rangs got him going to the Dallas Cowboys at 5. And then the Jaguars, and this is an outlier pick if you look around with the mock drafts that are out there and the discussion that's out there. But A'shaun Robinson of the Alabama Crimson Tide, another guy you will see on display tonight. This is what Rob Rang said, and I don't see this pick as being anything close to being likely for the Jaguars at number 5. But here's what Rang said. He said, Blake Bortles emerged as a legitimate franchise quarterback in his second season, leaving the Jaguars likely to build up Coach Gus Bradley's defense in 2016. Adding the massive and powerful Robinson to a defensive front, looking forward to getting back 2015 first-rounder Dante Fowler Jr., who missed his rookie season with a torn ACL, could finally make Jacksonville a contender in the AFC South. You tell me we're a defensive tackle away from being a contender in the AFC South? Is that the piece that they're missing?
Yeah.
I mean,
good news, everyone.
Good news, because Cedric Marks will be back next year.
You're contending.
Contending in the AFC South. My goodness. Did it make you feel good as a Jag fan out there to see Houston get the beat down, or did it make you feel worse knowing you're that much further away because Houston handled you easily just a week ago and couldn't do anything right?
It made me that much more disappointed thinking about how ill-prepared it looked like the Jags were for that game.
Right.
Just uninterested in that football game week 17.
Yeah, I agree with you. So, A'shaun Robinson, I don't think it's a likely spot, but it's a starting point.
I'll be watching him pretty closely tonight.
Absolutely. Heck, Alabama's got like a bunch of guys on that side. May go in the first round tonight. Numerous players on that side of the ball. Shaq Lawson, another guy for Clemson, potential first-round pick. He is supposed to play tonight. That's the hope for the Clemson Tigers. If he doesn't, they could be in more trouble than they already are. Mackenzie Alexander, obviously, we mentioned. Bama's got Reggie Ragland at linebacker. They're stacked up. A couple other things, if you missed Tony Pauline on Friday, talking about cornerbacks, and we're continuing the Ramsey discussion, he just feels like the 10th through 20th pick, that range of the draft is the sweet spot for where the corners matchup value and best player on the board and all that stuff. And so obviously with the Jags selecting at 5, if they go that direction, he will feel like they're reaching a little bit. Doesn't mean they will be reaching. And he has Joey Bosa as his number one overall player right now. It seemed pretty firm on that. There's been a lot of tape out on Bosa. I doubt the evaluation of him changes all that much unless he goes out there and absolutely stinks at the combine, you know, and open some question marks. But if he, you know, if he works out, and who knows if he'll even work at the combine, a guy ranked that highly, whether it's his pro day or anywhere else, as long as he puts up respectable workout numbers, you can expect him to be a lock. I can't believe the consensus best pass rusher in the draft is going to get out of the top 3 of any draft unless it's all quarterback heavy at the very top. And the feeling is right now there's not a quarterback that's going to compel anybody to trade up with Tennessee to take that top spot and therefore push another position player down to number 5, which may be the ideal scenario. Quarterback off the board, first 2 picks, Bosa, Ramsey, Tunsil, or your choice of anybody else for the Jacksonville Jaguars wouldn't be the worst position to be in. All right, we'll take a break here. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Today, we asked you in the fan feedback spotlight, who's the biggest GOAT from Wild Card Weekend, be it Brian Hoyer or Blair Walsh or anybody on Cincinnati. Had a lot of write-in votes for Jeremy Hill. I don't think he's as big a goat as the two defensive players, but certainly if you want to cast your ballot in that direction, you're welcome to do that. With Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey, back with more Jaguars Today in a moment on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, final few minutes of the program. Jaguars Today getting ready to wrap up on this Monday. Brought to you by Wild West Guns of Gold. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, John Osher with the day off. He's got jury duty today. He's going to be a hanging judge is what he is. Coming up this Saturday night in 5 days, St. John the Divine Greek Orthodox Church's Centennial Fund will benefit from the HEPA Comedy Night over on Parental Home Road at the Ramala Club. Going on this Saturday, the world-famous Basile the Comedian is in town and performing. And if you want to support the folks who support us and make our trip to the Super Bowl possible every single year, St. John the Divine Greek Orthodox Church has been great friends of this program and all my programs here on 1010XL. Their Centennial Fund is trying to raise money. $50 tickets for adults, $35 for kids or for children 18 and younger. That includes heavy hors d'oeuvres, dancing. You get the show, cash bar, and a lot more going on this Saturday night. For more information, contact Jem at 563-1789. That's 563-1789. That's coming up this Saturday night. In the meantime, let's get out to Ponte Vedra, get Jim on the line before we get to the fan feedback spotlight today. Hi, Jim. How are you?
Morning, guys. Just real quick, on the Dirk Cutter thing, he seemed to all, whenever they talk about their resume for Dirk, they're always saying, you know, he worked with Matt Ryan and, you know, Jameis. They always seem to leave off the Blaine Gabbert reference. I always get a kick out of that. Nobody ever brings that up. But the other thing, too, what disheartened me about the game this weekend with the Texans was it kind of confirmed to me what Ryan had said earlier in the week, that he felt like the Jags just laid down, and I'd have to agree with that. But watching the Seattle game yesterday and seeing what Gus and, you know, Dan Quinn in Atlanta want to do with their respective defenses, I was a little more disheartened because I'm like, it seemed like the Jags are even further away from having that quality defense because there were so many guys on that defense that are running around that weren't out of position. Like you see, and you watch the Jags, and half the time, there's always somebody out of position. That's the thing that got me kind of disheartened this weekend.
Yeah, look, it's still, you got to have the talent to run it, right? And that's what it comes down to with I watched Cam Chancellor, who did get flagged for that key pass interference, Tony. But for a strong safety, he's known as a hitter. He can cover better than any safety on this roster.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that.
Earl Thomas
in another category
all
by himself.
Over the field.
Right. And, I mean, you got all those corners there that can lock you down. Yeah, I agree. You got to have the personnel to run it.
They rotate that line.
The system can work if you got the right people. Any system can work if you got the right kind of talent in there. As far as Dirk Cutter goes, Dirk Cutter benefits from, first of all, they always focus on your successes when you talk about these things, but he benefits from, look what happened to Matt Ryan this year when he left, right? I mean, Matt Ryan's play fell off significantly.
Yep.
Jameis Winston had a nice rookie season, so he is getting momentum for that. I think most people look at Blaine Gabbert and said, or early on, it was a situation where even if Gabbert turns out to be great, nobody was prepared. That was, remember, the lockout season, so you didn't have an off season. And he basically gets thrown into the job right before the season kicked off when Jack Del Rio said, I can't win with this guy, David Garrard. Let's go to Blaine Gabbert. And I'm not trying to make excuses for Blaine, who didn't help himself out whatsoever by his body language and his play and his lack of pocket presence. And I'm putting things very kindly for him right now. But I don't think people look at that situation and say, wow, I'm surprised Dirk Cutter didn't make Blaine Gabbert play like a Pro Bowler in those circumstances. So
yeah.
I don't think it's held against him. And, you know, you can choose to do that, certainly if you want to. But in the end, Dirk Cutter has got a pretty good reputation around the National Football League. Much like, you know, we had talked about, so did Greg Olsen, right? But he didn't have the results. You're like, well, he conducted the 32nd ranked offense. Yeah, but he did it with a rookie quarterback last year who didn't have Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree. They had nobody at wide receiver.
No.
So it was, you know, there were a lot of pieces that were missing there. Again, Greg Olsen, can he work in the NFL? Well, you tell me. The Jags took a huge jump in points per game this year. Was it perfect? No. but he's certainly capable of being a successful offensive coordinator. So you can't always hold their past failures against him. You got to look a little bit deeper on some of those from time to time. Tony, fan feedback spotlight today, asking people who is the biggest GOAT. I think we got votes for all these guys today, didn't we?
We got votes all over the place, but those who included the hashtag here, Irish Jaguar, Perfect, and Pac-Man, all they did was within their own control rather than bad luck or a talent deficiency. From Jarrell Blair Walsh, a.k.a. Ray Finkel Jr., hashtag laces out. There was a lot of Ace Ventura going around.
Yeah, am
yesterday.
I the only person who doesn't like that movie?
I like it. So you're the only person in this
room. In this
room,
like, there are only two.
Like
Tyler,
movie.
Do you like Ace Ventura, Pet Detective?
Never seen it.
All right.
Shocking.
That doesn't bother me.
From
it's
Eric.
It's not a classic or anything.
Can I pick someone else if Jeremy Hill holds on to the ball? Perfect and Jones aren't in this group. We've discussed that a little bit today. And from Daniel, Blair Walsh, you can't miss from 27, hashtag ultimate choke. I do think when you look back at this wild card weekend, the one that's going to live in memory longer is the Walsh miss. I feel like the out-of-control nature of what happened with Perfect and Jones, it's split enough that you're not going to remember one or the other vividly. The 27-yard field goal at home to beat Seattle, that's one of those, that's Buckner. That's one of those that you never live down.
Players this year in the NFL, 27 yards or shorter, kickers, were 189 for 191. So basically 99%. Accurate.
Jeez
Louise. Those kicks. 189 for 192 now. if you throw that in. A few on Facebook here. Joshua said, this is interesting because everyone's convinced it's their guy, right? And that usually makes it a good debate. But Joshua said it has to be Hoyer had more opportunities with the football than anybody listed, and he completely played like garbage. Dom said that the coaches say physical errors happen, but mental errors are inexcusable. Add in the outpouring of embarrassment coming from their fan base and former players, and the Bungles win by a landslide. The referees, said Taylor, in the Bengals-Steelers game. Josh went off the board with Adrian Peterson, 45 yards on 23 carries and a fumble loss. That was a key play as well. Teresa said it has to be Hoyer. Damon went with Blair Walsh. You are a professional kicker. It's your only job. But he missed a 27-yarder WTF. You'll have to tell me what that means after the program, please. So votes across the board. It was that kind of weekend. It was more about who blew it than who seized control. Kansas City's defense seized control.
Yeah.
And their offense was efficient and did a pretty good job slowing down J.J. Watt, who's now going to have, what, groin surgery, I think I saw Tuesday. So wouldn't be surprised if we don't see him in the Pro Bowl either. It is now officially see how quickly these guys can withdraw from Pro Bowl season.
Yeah, it's getting to that point. Again, that feels like the Buckner thing. That feels like one of those that you just never live down. It's Norwood missing against the Giants, even though that was not the easiest, the field goals. But it's one of those that's the one you're never going to forget. And Cincinnati, the NFL, I think, is culpable in this thing too. In that you had two games with bad blood, clear bad blood between these teams. You did nothing about it after the first meet. I mean, nothing about it. You have a player talking about spilling another player's blood in the streets. And how does the NFL respond? It doesn't to that. You get the second game where you got a bunch of shenanigans with Vontaze Perfect at the center of it again in that game with Ben Roethlisberger. And then you got him getting in a fight with a player on the goal line, getting in a shoving match on another kickoff, throwing a punch on a kickoff even later in that football game. The officials needed to be looking out for what was happening with 55 in that game, and instead they let it get way out of control, and it turned into the circus that it did in that last minute.
And that is the exclamation point on the day. That does it for us. Thanks for playing along on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on Jaguars Today. Jeff Loggeman will join us tomorrow, talk a little playoff football, and talk about the Jags offseason as well. For Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt, and for Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey signing off. XL Primetime is next here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.